Good evening or good morning.
Wait, don't start it yet.
Okay.
Okay, now you can start.
Okay, good evening, everybody.
Okay, starting in 3, 2, 1.
This has been a disaster already. Should we start over? Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our Under the Radar podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood.
Hey, you're the one that said you wanted to record us getting ready. I just figured I'd help.
I'm joined by David Griggs. I don't know why. I think we should put him over here. John Salica and from Bracketeer.org, Rocco Miller back with us again as well. This is our Under the Radar podcast, though, where we review and go over all of the conferences that are normally single bid leagues, although not necessarily. There's 22 of those conferences. They do not include, Salica, what don't they include?
We don't include the regular 10 multi-bid conferences, which would be the Power Five plus the Big East, the Atlantic 10, the American, the Mountain West, and the West Coast Conference. And we also don't include top 25 teams. So Buffalo, you're still top 25. A team like Lipscomb, you're knocking on the door, so you'll still get mentioned tonight.
Right. And as far as those conferences go, just correct me, we don't care about them.
We don't even know that they exist.
Right.
A big week for Buffalo. Really tried to get back under the radar, but just couldn't do it.
We do like to start things off normally in the show with a feature conference. And I figured that this would be a good week now that we're into February to feature our favorite conference. And I'm serious about it.
Yes, it's about friggin' time.
We haven't done it. We've been saving this all year. I like to save this one for a little later on the season. Now it's serious. And here it is. The number one conference, in my opinion, in the entire nation, at least among Under the Radars, the Northeast Conference.
It is. A couple good things. The environments are great. The rivalries are great. The venues are incredible. It's these small gymnasiums. You're right on top of the floor. It's snack bars, not concession stands. It's people are eating popcorn and drinking beer out of cans. And they're playing in gyms with air conditioning units on the ceiling. It is phenomenal. It is what we love about college basketball. It's so conducive. It's a 10-team league, a double round robin. The regular season feeds into the conference tournament the way it should, with games being at campus sites. It's reseeded, is it not, at the semis, Chad?
Yes.
Yeah. So again, it's what you're watching now, and again, look at the standings. We've got four teams separated by one game, and this isn't just, it doesn't matter. No, it matters a lot because it has a lot to do with who's going to get to play at home in the conference tournament and get a big advantage. And every single game you watch is exciting, all of them.
Well, I think even more than that, David, from first to ninth place, there's three games separating everybody. Rocco, you look at the overall records, everybody looks like they're more or less 11-11.
Yeah, it's crazy. Robert Morris had a stranglehold on the league up until last week when they lost twice in a row against St. Francis and Fairleigh Dickinson, St. Francis of PA. And now both of those teams are right behind them in second, along with Sacred Heart. And it's anybody's contest at this point to get the number one seed going into a no holds barred situation, which is the NEC tournament.
Right. We ran a poll on Twitter. Did you see this?
Yes.
100% of the people said the NEC tournament was bigger than the Super Bowl.
I was one of them. I'm proud to be one of those people.
Yes.
John, though, you look at this. We've got eight games left, and not only for the top seed, but only eight teams even make this conference tournament. It's just going to be wild here on out, isn't it?
I was going to say, about the only team that's not really close to 500 is Mount St. Mary's, who normally would be a contender, but for a team that's going to be completely reloading from a couple of years ago where they actually made the NCAA tournament, a little bit of a surprise. But even a team like Central Connecticut State, who was more towards the middle of the pack, suddenly they find themselves on the bubble just to make the NEC tournament.
Well, Central Connecticut State actually a little improved off of that. They had a couple of rough years recently. St. Mm-hmm. Francis Brooklyn is a team that we've been cheering on to try to get that first bid. I don't think Sacred Heart's ever been to the NCAA tournament either, and they're up there.
I'm pretty sure they haven't.
Not in D1.
I don't even know. I don't know if they've been past the semis of this tournament.
Yeah, so it's one of their best years ever at this point, if they can hang in there. Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule, which is Rocco, we're just going to circle all 10 of these
games, correct? 10 games.
Yes, please do. Please do. As David mentioned earlier, you know, in the Northeast Conference, you get a mix of, you know, like a Hoosiers type gym with a underground wrestling crowd, and, yeah, and you get to play a Stanley Cup format for the playoffs. It doesn't get better than the combination of those three things.
Yeah, and these kids come from the playgrounds of New York, like the Northeast cities. It is just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's and it's just, these schools are all so close. You don't get that out west, for example, Rockaway, where no, you are. You'd give, maybe you have two schools that are close like these are, but you're a short drive between the majority of these schools. You could go to three of these games in a single day, maybe even four.
I love that about where you guys live. I do envy that.
Yeah, I've been to Fairleigh Dickinson, fun games up there for myself. Haven't gotten up into Brooklyn yet, but I'm intent to soon.
Yeah. But
let's from there, let's swing over to the rest of the conferences, I guess. And John, let me let you start things off in the America East, where Vermont is continuing to win games, picked up another win tonight, blowing out Maine.
Well, they get the win against Maine, also get a win at UMass Lowell, and they're still going to have the game edge on Stony Brook, who also beat Hartford and Binghamton. So that game that Vermont won against Stony Brook starting to loom a little bit large as we get towards the heart of America East play here and the fight for home court throughout.
Yeah, and even though David Stony Brook picked up like their 5 millionth road win tonight at Binghamton, I still think that they've got a
They got a
huge uphill battle here.
Yeah, and I know Binghamton's not really good, but for the first time in a couple of weeks, Stony Brook didn't look like they were just kind of clunking through it. I mean, really winning decisively like you would expect them to put them away. Another team that we got to talk about, Chad, I think we kind of wrote them off, but I think they've won five or six in a row, is UMBC, yeah, red hot, and sneaking up on second place there to host the semifinals.
Except they lost tonight to Hartford, didn't they?
They did. I missed
They were them. Down. They were down. I don't know.
70-61 according to the screen right there.
There we got to start the show. Now we really I was thinking, looking at the standings, I thought they were tied with Stony Brook for second, but they lost to Hartford tonight.
They lost Hartford. Now they're game behind Stony Brook. Yes, that's exactly what happened.
What have you ever done? What have they?
Yeah, they've never won anything big. Yeah. Upcoming schedule real quickly, Albany at Vermont, and then Vermont hosting New Hampshire as well, and while Stony Brook is hosting Lowell, and I think that's it for them for this next upcoming week. But let's keep things rolling right on along here to the Atlantic Sun. And Rocco, let me turn to you as we go to the A-Sun.
Yeah. We have
one of the best under-the-radar teams in the entire nation sitting at the top of it, don't we?
We do. Yeah, Lipscomb has been fantastic. Garrison Matthews has been a phenomenal leader on the team, but they're a deep team. They've got a freshman that's playing more and more coming off the bench named Asan Asadula. He just won his first Newcomer of the Week award in the A-Sun last week. So they're actually a pretty deep team with a solid foundation after Matthews graduates. Of course, last week at this time, they demolished Liberty, and they've been rolling since. I looked at the score earlier tonight. They were up by close to 40 at North Florida, a road game. So this league's not challenging them too much. I think all that's really left is the return game with Liberty, which is a week from today. And Liberty has also been kind of struggling since. I noticed last night they really had to sweat against Stetson.
At home, yeah, by three to get Stetson.
So I think the wild card here is a team that's steadily been improving after a disastrous non-league is Florida Gulf Coast. They actually went to Lipscomb a couple of weeks ago and only lost by eight. So maybe Gulf Coast, as time goes on and we get to the tournament, could be a dangerous team to watch.
Yeah, they won tonight over North Alabama. I watched a lot of that game, and they've struggled, though. It was a very close game, but that was really about a 3-point until about the last minute when they opened it up to seven.
But, yeah, Chad, I know we've got to keep it moving, but maybe this is something we should devote another couple minutes to. You did something on Monday that was really interesting, and that was doing the blind resumes. You put Lipscomb next to Auburn, where it won't work now because I just spoiled it. But yeah, pull those up again, because this is a team that – when you look at them on paper, and this happens a lot with under-the-radar teams, we talk about this every year, it's hard for an under-the-radar team, even a really good one, to get paper that sometimes matches how good they are. And if you don't believe me, ask the teams that have played Middle Tennessee in recent years. But even on paper, when you put those two next to each other, I still think, as much as TCU has struggled, their only home loss is to Lipscomb. Liberty's only home loss is to Lipscomb. They have another notable good win at SMU. Not good, but decent. They have 9 true road wins. And when you put that next to Auburn, Auburn beat Washington at home. They've yet to beat anybody away from home that's anywhere close to the NCAA tournament. Don't you like Lipscomb better on paper?
I think I agree with you completely. I think one of the only points, the selling points that Auburn has is they've got the chance to really improve that resume. Lipscomb doesn't have it.
Right.
They got to win that home game against Liberty, but right. And then just not
yeah.
have themselves, basically.
And, yeah. And you see there Lipscomb getting votes in one of the polls. I don't know if it's the coaches or the AP. I'm glad they're getting votes. I do not think they're one of the 25 best teams. If I had a vote, I would not vote for them. But I absolutely think they are one of the best 40. And if they win out, they belong in whether they win the tournament or not. That's how I feel about it.
Rocco?
Yeah, I thought after that exercise and the blind resume, I have to admit I wasn't fully prepared to do that right at the start of the show. But it got my juices flowing, and after that night, I actually finished my bracket that I posted Tuesday. And what it made me realize is, yes, I love everything David's saying about Lipscomb, and I've been on board with that. There is something that is worthwhile with a more of a Power 5 team that's got a big chunk of Quad 2 and Quad 3 wins, which is obviously very much lacking on Lipscomb's profile. The majority of their wins are in Q4. Of course, not something they can control being in a league like this and having the scheduling challenges they have. But I think in a comparison, it's tough to just say all those Q2 and 3 wins by Auburn don't matter because their signature win's not as good as Lipscomb's. So I think you got to look at the whole body of work, and it makes it a little bit more of a tougher comparison. And when you get a committee voting on these things, you know, it probably would favor Auburn. But I think that the point David's making is valid, and I think Lipscomb is a team that you don't want to see when the bracket is revealed, as long as they get this bid from the ASUN.
Yeah, and the whole point of that blind resume Monday night, quite honestly, and both was to surprise you all of you guys with it, but also to show that, not necessarily say that Auburn is that Lipscomb's way better than Auburn, but you know at right. least this is the same discussion. And, you know, to say that, you know, Auburn is 5 lives better than Lipscomb right now, I don't know that that's true.
Yeah.
I don't know that they're better than Lipscomb, period.
They may not be, but I think that's a
pretty good game. If they played on equal terms, I don't think they're good enough to win at Auburn.
Okay. I agree.
Good at all.
Real quick, that'd be a good game on a neutral court.
Yeah. We already mentioned next Wednesday is that Liberty-Lipscomb return game. Before that, Liberty's got to host Gulf Coast. Lipscomb's got to host Jacksonville. But let's really keep things moving here.
Yeah.
And swing right over to the Big Sky. And, John, let me bring you back in on the Big Sky, where we've got 3 teams that are just they're not exactly dominating against everybody else by any means. That they are pulling away from the rest of the league, I think.
Yeah, Montana finally does get a half game ahead of Northern Colorado and also Weber State with 1 game during the past week. But by the same time, Northern Colorado, bit of a surprise losing at home to Montana State, which helps to account for part of the difference in the standings. But Weber State also losing at home to Portland State. That's the other surprise in the league from the past week.
Yeah, this seems to keep slipping up, and I think I know it's at a neutral court in Boise for the conference tournament, but I think it's going to be a fun conference tournament when we get there, Rocco, don't you?
I think it will, and I think, you know, anything can and will happen in this league the way it's gone this year so far. With teams losing on their home court like Weber State and Northern Colorado did last week, it just goes to show anybody can really beat anybody on a given night. Eastern Washington is a team that's recently gotten hot. Jacob Davidson last week put up 41 against Northern Arizona, shot 60% from the field in 2 Eagle victories. I think, you know, even a team like that could surprise. So, and we've seen what Montana State can do.
Yeah, and that might be the game of the week coming up this weekend, Eastern Washington at Montana. One of the top
Washington conference. Much improved, you mentioned. They were awful all the way up until about a couple of weeks ago.
Correct.
And let's not forget the conference tournament. Are the floor sweepers back? Have you contacted
the league
to see if we're getting
half-time.
Yeah, that at halftime.
David, over in the Big South, we've got this Radford team that is you know, even though they're only up by a game, they just seem to be way better than everybody else.
Yeah, I agree. They're up by a game. Two games over Winthrop, who's also kind of been hot. They weren't hot at home. Radford went into Winthrop's looked like one of the best teams outside of Radford, and Radford went in there and clobbered them. I know they have the one loss. I mean, they're not totally unbeatable, but I do think they're kind of running away with it. They're going to get it at home, and I do think it's going to be Radford at the end.
And Sleek, I think the big surprise of this league this week actually came at the bottom, where UNC Asheville, who had one D1 win heading into the week, almost beat a pretty good Gardner Webb team, lost by a single point.
Well, it might be one reason why they're actually a half game ahead of USC Upstate as far as the basement right here. But what happened to Longwood since the beginning of the year, where it looked like they were going to have their best season as far as a D1 program, but a 3-7
What's sad is that they still might.
You're right. It might still be the best season. Eric, they do have double-digit wins. Hey, that's pretty good for Longwood. But real quick, upcoming in the Big South this week, a bunch of games coming up here Thursday, Saturday, then Wednesday.
Radford, it looks like both of those are very winnable, so we'll probably be talking about them again next week as the first place.
Asheville with the return revenge game at Upstate. They already beat them once this year. Coming up next Wednesday. Rocco, the Big West Conference, you're a West Coast guy here. I know it's one of your favorite leagues out there.
It is one of my favorite leagues, and I just found out tomorrow night, Hawaii at Long Beach State, not to jump ahead, is Fresh Prince of Bel-Air night. Where they're
gonna
they're going to be giving out Fresh Prince of Bel-Air t-shirts to the first 500 students. Should be a rocking atmosphere at the Pyramid, so I'll tune in for that. And, of course, tonight a big game with Irvine and Fullerton. Fullerton probably the hottest team in the league. Irvine had a big-time win last week. At Santa Barbara in the Thunderdome, which was a very big crowd. And Irvine also got revenge on Long Beach State in the black and blue game. So they've already played both of those and split both road teams winning.
I should also add that anyone who doesn't get the t-shirt at that game, they're going to be bringing their Blazers inside out like the Fresh Prince did wear in the early seasons.
Irvine, you know, they've got the game at Santa Barbara and at Hawaii already behind them. They're pretty much running downhill. One of the things, I'm a little surprised that their net is only 121, given their record. The teams that they've beaten, I mean, doesn't that seem a little bit low?
You look at the predictive metrics side of things, I think that's where that comes in, that their adjustive offense only 187. They're not an efficient team, I guess, and that's where the net difference from that RPI, and you know, 121 to 78 if we use the old RPI formula.
It just seems a little low, but it is.
And I think a couple of those, they got blown out against Utah State by 24, and I think margin of victory might be
hurt. I don't think that should count because they wouldn't put the score on the screen.
Okay, yeah, here's that Irvine profile. You see it in the loss column there. You have 71 54 89 65, a 10 point loss, a 9-point loss. So
that helps explain. And then Beach is not good.
And if you look at some of the wins, there were a lot of close wins. Cal Baptist by 3 in one of the branches of the River Vine Cup, and Long Beach by 2.
And Beach isn't good, and they had to sweat it. Well, they lost to him once and then barely beat him. Beach just has their number, don't they? I know it's a rivalry, but of all the teams to struggle against.
Right, we already mentioned the big games coming up tonight and tomorrow in this conference, as well as this weekend, Irvine hosting Hawaii, Santa Barbara hosting Davis. But let's roll right on over to the Colonial. And David, let me let you take this conference, where this one of the biggest surprises this weekend, I thought, was Hofstra not only losing by 14 points to Northeastern.
Yeah, real unimpressive. And this is a Hofstra team that had been on an absolute tear. And really, Chad, if you watch that game, 14 points, they were down by more than that for the majority of the game. And again, Northeastern is a little perplexing. I know Rocco's big on them. He's gone to see them a couple times. They're capable of playing really well. It's just that they don't always do it. But is this one of those teams, if Northeastern were to win the conference tournament, hypothetically speaking, and get on the 14 and 15 line and bring their A game, they could really make a high team, a protected seed, sweat. But I still think Hofstra is the team to beat despite the big loss on the road. It was just sort of like Northeastern having an awesome game and Hofstra not having their best one.
Well, I don't know, David, because if we start dissecting it a little bit more here, I put both those profiles on the right there. Hofstra, the lousy strength of schedule, most of their wins down in quadrant four. Northeastern, while they have three very bad losses on the bottom there, they've gotten the wins against the top. And Rocco, yeah, is it time to really say, hey, maybe Northeastern's a favorite to win this bid?
They definitely could be. And I mean, with Charleston playing at home, I'm certainly not going to ignore them, essentially at home. But Northeastern, I love the way that Vasa Pachika, he plays such a dynamic brand of basketball. He's a European, Portuguese style of basketball that he finds the open guys on the court. This offense is really fun to watch. It's more of a motion style and keep the ball moving type. Fun team to watch. And they've just dealt with a ton of injuries. And I think even their star guard, Sean Osius, he had to miss that Hofstra game. But the backup, Jordan Rowland, he's actually been playing at a higher level. So even without Osius, they dominated without him. So anyway, the Huskies are a good overall team, and they've learned to adjust with the injuries.
Right. This week coming up, Hofstra, a couple of home games against Elon and William & Mary. On Northeastern is hosting William & Mary and Elon. I guess they are travel partners in this week.
Who's director of basketball ops voted for Hofstra? 36 in the coaches poll, I see.
I would say probably two of them right there, at least.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's, John, Conference USA, which has been, I think every single week we've done this show, we've had a different team in first place. We're back to Old Dominion this week. We've had them a couple of times, but we are now one game in the loss column between first and sixth place here.
Well, we're playing musical chairs as far as the conference lead, but as you've also pointed out, we're about three games away from determining who the three-team pods are going to be as far as the remaining scheduling goes. So Old Dominion, needless to say, with two wins, they'll at least get into the top spot. And then North Texas, not the best week losing head-to-head to Old Dominion, but at least that was a road game for them.
Yeah, and we've got that, UAB slipped up a couple of times, including losing to the second time to Middle Tennessee in a fashion. They just totally choked away that game.
That's one way of putting it.
But it is interesting because only the top five teams get into that top pod, and if you are at the end of the next three games in sixth place, you cannot move up. The best you can finish is sixth place in terms of seeding for the conference tournament. Regardless of your overall record. So, and David, I know you and I are going to be following the bottom four-team pod because only two of those teams will even make the conference tournament.
Yeah, that's got survival board implications at it. So just, I mean, when you look at the pub that this conference is going to get with this format, it's better games for the top of the league and it's survival board implications for the bottom of it. It's just brilliant. The only thing they need to do is take 13 teams instead of 12 so we can have a quadruple header.
A quadruple header?
Or a quintuple header. A quintuple header. I'm not in championship week form.
Lots of interesting games coming up this week. Old Dominion with the test at UAB coming up tomorrow night. This conference is going to get pretty exciting. I think this conference is going to be fun during this, what they call the bonus play also.
Yeah.
But we're going to pay a lot more attention to this conference in the next couple of weeks. But let's quickly run over to the Horizon League. And, John, this is in your backyard there where NKU's lead in the conference is starting to shrink after getting swept this week by IUPUI and UIC.
A little bit of a surprise, but at the same time, it's also surprising in that a team like Wright State failed to take complete advantage because the Raiders actually got swept this year by Illinois-Chicago, which did not help. And they also got out to a pretty strong start against the IUPUI, where they actually jumped out 21-4. And it only took them about 7 minutes and 30 seconds to reach 24 points, which NC State couldn't even do at all this weekend.
But the score ended up being close. But at the end, though, it only being a 5-point win that Wright State held on to there. But Rocco, is there another team here, though? Because you look, is it Wright State? But though they lose a game to, they get swept by UIC. Is it Oakland? They lose to Youngstown at home. where do you go here?
I think the only consistent team, I know NKU got swept last week, but Iwakui and Illinois Chicago have been a little bit tougher than most at home. Give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt going on a tough road trip and not coming home with a win, that they're still got the edge. But I think we've talked about this several times, like once you get to Detroit, I mean, there's not enough separation here to say anybody's safe.
This week's schedule, NKU is hosting Detroit and Oakland, so they've really got to win both those games if they want to try to get that top seed in the conference tournament and lock that up.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see the fifth, 10th, 9th, and 8th place teams in the semifinals.
Well, actually, only the top 80
is possible. But whatever the lowest teams are, I think that's who's going to the semifinals.
After the 9th and the 10th making the finals in back-to-back years, they decide to drop those two teams even out of the conference tournament.
Yeah. So we're going to have 5, 8, and 6, and 7. Okay. That's going to be the same.
David. The Ivy League saw another sort of surprising, maybe not so surprising that Harvard beats Yale at home, but the way they beat Yale.
The way that they pounded them, and it was, considering how Harvard had looked and how Yale had looked coming into the game, again, whenever you get those two together, they have kind of a storied rivalry, not quite what Princeton and Penn have, but it's still kind of a rivalry, and for Yale to just get beat that badly, it was kind of shocking. Princeton now in the driver's seat, 4-0, and how about Penn? Just a game out of fourth place.
How about Penn? 4-0. We keep saying this, 4-0 in the Big Five, beats Villanova, Temple on the way, and then they go and they lose yet another game to Cornell before they finally pulled one out by 2 points against Columbia to finally get their first.
What is wrong with the – I don't know.
Upcoming schedule in the Ivy League. We're getting playing Friday and Saturday night here. Penn and Princeton are at Yale and Brown, while Harvard is hosting Columbia and Cornell.
Yeah,
I think it's also noteworthy to point out that Penn is going to have all of their road games front-loaded in conference play, so they will be finishing the year for the most part at the Palestra.
That's a good point. So I think that would give them a chance to make that run at that fourth seed and make the conference tournament. Rocco, Metro Atlantic Conference. Rocco?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you guys were cutting out just a little bit. Okay.
Well, no, it's the Metro Atlantic Conference.
It's the Metro Atlantic Conference. I cut out on purpose there. Did you have anything to say? Ryder after back-to-back games to Monmouth and Manhattan. I mean, what the hell?
Seven conference wins after only one.
David is reading my mind. I do want to give some props to Monmouth for not giving up on the season, which would have been easy to do. I think they were, 1-12 at one point, even 0-11 at one point. So, so Coach Rice kept these guys together. And in the league, they played pretty well. I know they got blown out twice in the Buffalo area. But besides that, they've been fantastic at home and just beat the best team in the league. So, who knows? Maybe Monmouth gets the bid and goes to Dayton.
That would be the most, Metro Atlantic thing ever if – Monmouth right on the bubble 2 years in a row and really getting shafted one of those 2 years. If this is the year they go to the NCAA tournament after losing their first 11 games.
It's unbelievable. But, I mean, incredible finish coming up here for the rest of the season with only, two games separating first and sixth place there.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun. It will be bad, but it will be fun.
It'll be bad, but it'll be fun.
But if you also want to talk about bad timing for Monmouth, it's not going to be till the following year when the Metro Atlantic actually takes their tournament to Atlantic City, which would be a little closer to a home environment than Siena's place would be.
Yeah, they'll be the closest school to a little bit closer than Ryder is, but the closest school to Atlantic City when the conference tournament moves down here. This week, Ryder is hosting Canisius and Siena as they try to get things going again. Monmouth with a couple of road games at St. Peter's and at Fairfield. Stalica, over in the Mid-American Conference, first of all, ignore Buffalo, as we said at the top of the show, even though they're not even the first place team in the East, are they?
No, that would be because Bowling Green had their first sellout on Friday night when they beat the Bulls with their, I think, a student section of about 1,500 strong that included their entire football team. And they did not have a letdown later on when they won fairly easily at Western Michigan as well.
Yeah, very impressed by Bowling Green seeking their first NCAA tournament bid in half a century.
Yeah, you got a chance.
Rocco, how about the Toledo in the West? They've, you know, we kind of started to write them off a while ago, but they're starting to win some games.
They sure are, yeah. And they went to the Northern Illinois Huskies and beat them on the road, a place that Buffalo, of course, couldn't win. They did that on Saturday, and then they followed that up with a nice double-digit home win over Akron, another team you can't sleep on. The one thing about the MAC conference, and Toledo included, is you really can't take any team for granted. This team, this league, top to bottom, is so improved. I think right now they're about either eighth or ninth in the country as a league. And it's just been a lot of fun to watch. I've wanted this league to improve for a long time. So it's great to see the momentum that from top to bottom this league's creating. I don't even look at Buffalo's two losses as too bad of a loss, because they have a bullseye on their back everywhere they go. These are not the easiest places to travel to. And, you know, I think if Buffalo gets through this with three or four losses, I think they're still deserving of a bid. But, yeah, Toledo, a dangerous team, could easily win the MAC tournament. I think they assist somewhere around 17 or 18 times per night, which is one of the highest in the nation. So really good at spacing the floor and finding the open man.
Now, if you want to talk about a team that's been pretty lucky in the MAC so far, look at a team like Kent State, who is actually going to be unbeaten in games that are decided by 5 points or fewer. Last night when they were hosting Miami, they actually trailed by one in the final minute. Miami never even gets a shot off with 40 seconds to go, even coming out of a timeout. The shot clock expires. One of their players was dribbling, had no clue, and then Kent State on the ensuing possession is able to hit two free throws. Miami's final shot missed, and the Golden Flashes, they're also hanging within a couple games of Bowling Green and Buffalo.
Yeah, and a real interesting week coming up also this week. Saturday, Toledo at Bowling Green, Buffalo at Akron on Tuesday. And, David, how about Friday night?
Yeah.
Kent State at Akron.
Kent State at Akron, the wagon wheel game. Love this rivalry, perhaps the biggest under-the-radar rivalry.
Biggest in the MAC. I think there's arguments for a few others, but.
Oh, there's arguments. I said perhaps the biggest. I definitely think this one's in the discussion.
But David, let me stick with you and move over to the MEAC here, because I know you want to talk about something.
Savannah State winning two in a row, getting back to 500, really back in the hunt. They're just four games out of first place. Their last season as a D1 program, they can win the conference tournament. Is that what I wanted to talk about?
I guess it was. I don't even know what to say about this league. Norfolk State, who will be – in their home city for the conference tournament, now with a two-game lead over everybody else. Who was it? North Carolina A&T slipped a couple times this week, I believe. They slipped twice, yeah. Including getting crushed by FAMU, which was shocking there.
Norfolk State cracking the top 250 in the net. Florida A&M cracking the top 300. So now we have two teams that are below 300.
If you want to watch any MEAC hoops this week, there are the games on the right. Norfolk State at FAMU on Monday, next Monday, come up Monday night. There could be a big old first place battle there.
Next conference.
Next conference. All right. Rocco, let me head back over to you for the Missouri Valley.
Next conference.
Missouri Valley was getting a little exciting after Illinois State's big home win against Loyola Chicago over the weekend. And then last night they just did not remember that they had a game against Valparaiso at home. And it wasn't even close. I can't figure it out. Loyola Chicago, to their credit, bounced back and beat a very respectable Drake team handily yesterday. So, you know, the torch is back with the Ramblers. But, I mean, very disappointing league, unfortunately. I do love this league, but it's getting less and less motivating to watch some of these games.
This has got to be the worst Missouri Valley season I can recall my entire lifetime.
Not even close.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, not even close. I'm trying to think of the last – there have been years where they only put one team in, and that team ended up I can remember one year, although where the champion was on the 14 line, and that was the only team in. But at least they had somebody that was on the bubble and just passed. I want to say it was Missouri State when Quanzo
Martin. But we could really be looking at a 15 seed if the regular season champion wins the conference tournament, and that's unheard of for the Missouri Valley.
Right.
Upcoming schedule in the MVC should be flashed up on the screen right now. Loyola, who is still up by a game there, they've got a game at Valpo coming up on Sunday and then at Bradley next week. They probably lose them both the way this league is going.
Yeah.
The way this league is going, Indiana State's going to end up winning the conference tournament.
Hey, the trees will take it.
We already talked about the Northeast, so let's jump right over to the Ohio Valley Conference. And David, you want to talk some OVC hopes?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just there's a little bit of a discrepancy here. You see Jack State, Austin Peay, Murray State, and Belmont all
4-way tie.
It's a 4-way race, and then you see 8 other teams there. The 8 other teams have beat the top 4 teams a combined total of twice this year. We're halfway through the league. There's a little bit of a cavern between 4th and 5th. Really, like, Belmont is the team I like the best. They had a really nice win at Murray State. I was big on Murray State up until about 2 weeks ago. But when you sit and look at them, the two losses kind of made me sit up and take notice. And then you realize they only have 2 wins against teams with Div 1 running records. And P and Jack State not getting talked about as much, but they have as good of a shot of winning this conference tournament as any of the other two do. Yeah. And Jack State right now with the 2 wins over Belmont, I think holds the tiebreaker because they've beaten both Belmont and Murray. So if the conference tournament were to play today, they would buy into the semis. Yeah, it's a ladder format, yeah.
And Rocco, I know you were at that huge Jack State win over Murray last week, but then Jack State followed it up on Saturday by losing the home game to Austin Peay.
Yeah, I think this Austin Peay team is pretty dangerous. I don't think they're getting enough respect. If it wasn't for a blown 14-point second-half lead against Belmont, Austin Peay would have the lead to themselves at 9-1. Very impressed that they were able to go in and beat Jacksonville State with Jacksonville State riding such a high from 2 nights before. So, yeah, I think David's actually absolutely right. I could see any of the 4 winning the bid. I think they've all proven to be quality basketball teams for their own different reasons. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch because all 4 teams bring a different style of basketball and different strengths and weaknesses. So it's really hard to predict.
And I think by the same token, if you're looking for a possible sleeper to crash the top 4, look at a team like a Morehead State who actually won at Eastern Illinois over the weekend but actually lost at SIU Edwardsville. So they could just as easily be 6-4.
One of the things about Morehead is – and, yeah, I do – one of the things about this league and the reason I look at this is that traditionally the first team off the survival board comes out of this league. And because it's an early conference tournament and there's 4 teams that are left out, Morehead State plays the top 4 twice. They're the only team in the league that does that. So if they're going to creep into the top 4, it's kind of an uphill climb. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't see it happening either. I mean, as far as this week's upcoming schedule, Belmont probably the top 4 is the toughest week just because they've got 2 road tests, including a game at Eastern. I believe Eastern beat was one of the 2 teams that has a win over the top 4 this season already. So
maybe I better rephrase, not necessarily get in the top 4 as far as the regular season, but possibly to pull an upset in the OVC tournament in Evansville, right in the heart of OVC country.
John, let me stick with you with the Patriot League on the screen now with Bucknell. Did pick up a pair of nice road wins this week, actually, to reestablish themselves by a game up over Lehigh.
Yeah, the good news for Bucknell is they get the 2 road wins, and they also got some help from Colgate because they managed to win by 22 at Lehigh, which knocked the Mountain Hawks out of a tie for first because Lehigh had won at Army but only went 1-1 during the past week.
Yeah, and that was a huge surprise, actually, that score Monday night, Rocco, that just the way that Colgate dominated on the road.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. I thought Lehigh was a capable squad, and if they would lose games in this league, it wouldn't be by much. So that one caught me by surprise.
Yeah, that one was by much. It was by very, very much.
The upcoming schedule this week in the Patriot League, Bucknell is hosting BU, and then the huge game on coming up Monday night. I believe that's a national telecast to Lehigh at Bucknell, David.
Yeah, a big weekend here. You know, Boston U, Chad, they played that same Colgate team on Saturday, and I have some pictures here from the day after that game in the city of Boston. Okay. I was just kind of
this was
amazed.
From the city of Boston? Okay.
Yeah, this is the city of Boston. This is Sunday, the day after. Where's the damn screen share? Oh, here it is. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. This is kind of hard to do with no arms. So anyway, this is Sunday night after Boston U's big win over Colgate. Just remarkable there.
That's the
enthusiasm behind the Terriers.
That's a credit to the city of Boston. They're really coming out for their sports team.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen nothing else happened good in Boston the last few months, has there?
Well, Northeastern beat Hofstra.
Okay, you're right. You had two huge wins.
Yeah.
Two almost championships for the city of Boston the last few months.
Yeah.
let's go back to these standings here if I get it back up on the screen. And Rocco, let me turn over to you as we go over to probably the number one under the radar conference. Oh, definitely the number one under the radar conference.
Definitely.
OCon.
I think it's debatable with the MAC, but I agree these top four teams are pretty incredible. All tournament danger teams and even a potential at-large team or two in this league. I like last week we didn't learn too much because the top teams took care of the bottom teams. I thought Furman has been the most impressive because I think we all expected them to fade at some point, and they've continued to stay consistent.
They had a nice week, yep.
Yeah, and that keeps them in the picture. I mean, with the Villanova win, and I know Loyola Chicago's not as good as we thought, but it shows that they've got some merit to the bubble discussion.
Another thing about this Furman team, we were all kind of expecting them to fade. Two things. They had by far the biggest singular win out of conference, and that was against the win at Villanova, and they were into the rankings for a while. And another thing is just how young they are. And when the conference tournament starts and they've played everybody twice, sometimes that youth really starts to gel and it comes together. So while they're fading and while – I don't think they're going to finish in the top three. At no point did I think they would. That Furman-Wofford game, and that is a big rivalry. And Wofford, and I'm sorry, Furman played Wofford really, really tough in that first game. If that's the semifinal game, don't count Furman out.
And we've got a great – well, we had that kind of past week that Rocco mentioned last week. This week, coming up tomorrow night, Wofford at ETSU, also Greensboro hosting probably the fifth best team in the conference there, Samford, and then ETSU at Furman. ETSU has kind of been the fourth team of those four that we talked about the least, I think, this season. This could be a huge week for them this week with these two games.
Huge week for them. They had a really miserable non-conference. If you look at the strength of schedule, they're still 204th overall, but this will be our chance to really see what they're made of because their net rating is doing very well.
Yep. All right. John, over in the Southland Conference, we've had a few games actually over in final tonight, but Sam Houston State with another win tonight over McNeese, now 10-0 and starting to just roll through this league.
Yes. Sam Houston State is another team that's traditionally near the top of the Southland. Earlier in the non-conference portion, it was looking like it was going to be Abilene Christian who was going to be on track for at least their first NCAA Division I tournament appearance. But the Bearcats, I mean, one of their wins on Saturday was against traditional power SFA. But
impressive by 22 points for the rivalry game, yeah.
And then tonight getting the home win against McNeese by 15 points.
Right, and Abilene – just as a note, as we record this, Abilene Christian is up on the road at Lamar. But David, is this Sam Houston State team a team that has a chance to make any noise at all in the NCAA tournament? Could they be an upset team, or are they just not?
No, if you're asking me, no. I think that they're good enough to, like, at the under eight, oh, man, they look pretty good so far, and then you're going to continue to watch until halftime, and then by the under eight of the second half, there's three other games on, and they're all more interesting. That's not to knock what they've done in this league, and Abilene Christian certainly another good story. But when you're talking about beating a two seed, no.
Well, probably the game of the season so far in the Southland coming up Saturday. Sam Houston's at Abilene Christian. So,
yeah,
if you aren't watching Southland hoops this year, you should probably circle that one coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, and another beef I have with this league, they only take 8 teams. There's 13 in the league. What a wasted opportunity for a quintuple header.
I think we need to go on to the next conference, which would be – David, since you just said that, I'm going to give you the next conference because it's the SWAC.
Well, Prairie View remains unbeaten. They're running away with it. They've got a 3-game cushion with 9 games to go. Texas Southern seems to have finally rebounded. Other than that, I don't think anybody – Grambling's kind of been disappointing. I could see it being Prairie View and Texas Southern in the championship game, the winner playing the MEAC champion again in Dayton this year.
And really, I mean, this Prairie View team, Rocco, just keeps winning games since we got to conference play.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I think they're a decent team. I mean, they held strong a little bit during non-league, and now they haven't lost in the league. Another close call on Monday night, but they squeaked it out against Alabama State. So, yeah, I'm impressed. I'm intrigued to see what happens in the SWAC tournament.
And we normally only watch SWAC hoops here on Monday nights because it's, you know, that's kind of what we do after the Hoops HQ report. But yeah, it might be a Saturday for SWAC hoops as Prairie View is at Texas Southern.
Yeah, the top 2 teams. Mm-hmm. But Johnny Jones doing a good job and having a typical Johnny Jones year when you look at some of the games they've lost.
John, over in the Summit League, South Dakota State just keeps rolling along here, don't they?
Yeah, they keep rolling along, and teams like Omaha and Fort Wayne still winning themselves to at least stay within earshot of getting towards the top seed. But at the end of the day, it's still going to be a home court advantage in South Dakota once they get to conference tournament play here.
Yeah, I know they had to sweat a little bit at Oral Roberts, but I think this South Dakota State is good enough to win out, and they will. And I think we were really big on them coming into the year, ranking them in the top 10, talking about how they could get close to the bubble, and now we've sort of forgotten about them. How dangerous – is this team still as dangerous as we thought they were, even though they haven't kind of lived up to the expectation? And how – upset, how dangerous could they be against a protected seed in that round of 64?
They're just good. Know whoever faces them in the first round, not going to be happy to see Mike Dom on the other lineup.
Yeah,
and Jenkins too. But Rocco, yeah. How dangerous is this South Dakota State team when we get there?
Well, I think they're both dangerous because Dom and Jenkins both fire about 10 anywhere about 10 3-pointers on average each a game. And I think Dom might be a little above 10. So when you factor in the 3-point shot, last I checked, 3-pointers are worth more than 2-pointers.
And 50% more.
And if they play a team that likes to pound it inside, they're going to be able to stay in the game with some hot shooting. So I don't think anybody's safe. This team has had the same formula for almost a decade now. And I remember they came to Washington about 6 years ago and blew Washington out of the gym by like 25. And everybody was stunned. That was the team that ended up on the bubble.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so I think that game stuck with me for a long time. And I always think South Dakota State's going to knock somebody off. And they still haven't done it in the tournament. And maybe this is their year.
Yeah. This week they are hosting North Dakota. That's their only game coming up this weekend. David, over in the Sun Belt, we have this kind of this mass chaos again here. Another conference with 5 teams within a game of, at least in the loss column of first place. And that, and then even a couple of teams with 5 losses, a bunch of teams with 5 losses that are dangerous.
Well, 2 are particularly surprising. Coastal Carolina and Arlington have really kind of come out of nowhere. At no point, and I mean, going back to November, did I think that they would be this close to the top of the league, much less tied for the top of the league? They just didn't look it. And you almost wonder how the hell they did it. Georgia Southern, Louisiana, who's way down in the standings, I would have ranked them ahead of them all the way up until this week. I still think Texas State and Georgia State are the 2 best teams, but I don't really have an explanation for that, like how Arlington and Coastal have gotten up there. Arlington winning a big game at Texas State, really exciting game over the weekend, great atmosphere, and look at where they are now.
I have to wonder about the Louisiana schools, though, because it was one thing for them to both lose at Coastal Carolina, but when they're both losing to a hot, hot, hot Appalachian State team.
Yeah, where's the damn buzzer? Yeah. But seriously, this Coastal Carolina team, I mean, you know, they moved over to the Sun Belt a few years ago. It had been kind of disappointing after they had been so good over in the Big South, but it was the Big South they were in, right?
Yeah, it was a big song.
Yeah, yeah. But now Cliff Ellis kind of starting doing his thing again, Rocco, maybe.
Yeah, they're playing the best ball right now, winning five straight. I was really impressed that they took care of the Louisiana schools with such ease, both those being double-digit victories, and that's coming off the Arkansas road sweep. So 2 weeks in a row they've been nominated in my Teams of the Week feature, and now they've got Texas State on the road. We'll really see what they're made of.
Texas Arlington also. Yeah, they got
both schools. Yeah, big time, because we all know UTA is on fire right now as well. So those two schools are really intriguing.
Yeah, as we record this, Georgia Southern is about to move to 6-4. They're up big over Louisiana. Just in terms of other upcoming games there, that Georgia State is on the road at Louisiana and then hosting Troy in the next week. But really, I agree with you. Let's pay attention to Coastal Carolina the next week or so. And, John, let me let you finish things off with the last conference of the night. The Western Athletic Conference, where New Mexico State picked up another pair of wins over a couple of teams that are technically Division I, I believe.
Yeah, a couple wins for them, and Grand Canyon also getting a nice win themselves at Bakersfield, so they remain tied and actually also good as far as seeding implications for the Lopes go right here.
Yeah, I mean, it could come down to the rematch between these two teams here to determine it. David, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm all on board with the Lopes now. I think that they have their toughest games behind them. They've already played at New Mexico State. They've already played at Bakersfield. Their only loss was
David. They have the biggest game of the season coming up Saturday. Come on, don't say they've got their toughest games behind them.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the game at New Mexico State was tougher, wasn't it? And that's the only one they've lost, and it was a three-quarter shot. Now, that is going to be a show on Saturday. That's Saturday night, isn't it? I hope.
You say it, I know this is the UTR game of the day for Saturday.
Yeah, it is.
Rocco, you got a prediction for us for this game coming up on Saturday? This should be the game of the year at this point in the WAC.
I know the Lopes have a terrible track record against the Aggies. However, the Lopes were robbed on a 65-foot shot the last time they played. And I just think the atmosphere is going to be incredible. And I think I actually will predict that the Lopes win and win big.
Win big. Wow. Okay.
I think
a lot of frustration coming out on Saturday.
I think it's just going to be one of those days where everything goes right for the Lopes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to find out the game time for that game, but I think it's an evening game, but
I'm pretty sure it is.
And the Aggies better be ready for Bakersfield tomorrow, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If New Mexico State gets through both of these, you have to take your hat off to them, because their two hardest games all year are this week.
Absolutely.
And that is
all year in conference.
In conference. That is a 9 p.m. Eastern start. It is Saturday night.
Okay, good. It is. If you've not watched these two teams play each other, you want to tune in. It is a show. And you're going to want to follow them on Twitter, too, because it is awesome.
It's time to move to our under-the-radar top 10. We all submitted votes here. We actually have six honorable mentions I want to start by showing here. These are teams that did not make the top 10, but were mentioned. Old Dominion, New Mexico State, who we just discussed, Yale, Bowling Green, Furman missing the top 10, and of course Prairie View, the SWAC champion.
Really? Somebody voted for Prairie View.
That's the second week in the row somebody did that.
I also voted for the Wagon Wheel rivalry, but they're not on this list.
The way the screen works, there was no way to print a fake team, John. Sorry. UC Irvine, number 10 in our 10 on our list there, continue to lead the Big West.
I like them a lot more than nobody likes them but me. The predictive rankings don't like them. The net doesn't like them. You all don't like them.
Murray State coming in at number 9, still holding on to the top in the top 10. Number 8 is Jacksonville State. I think that's their first appearance in our top 10.
Good job, committee, for putting them.
Despite the loss to Austin Peay, they get there. Vermont at number 7, deservedly so.
Yeah.
Coming in at number six, we have East Tennessee State, getting a lot of love heading into their big week this
week.
Number five in the nation is that Hofstra team that we discussed, despite the loss to Northeastern, still think it's a pretty darn good team. Mm-hmm. And at number four is UNC Greensboro, the second place team in the SoCon. But then the top three, I don't think it's a surprise who the three teams are, just the order. But number three is Belmont. And number two is not going to show up on the screen for some reason. So we'll go to number one, who is Wofford. And there it is. Number two is Lipscomb, of course.
Oh, okay.
Should be. Yeah, there it goes. All right. But on that note, let me go ahead and pull this down and run through each of you for any other thoughts on the evening. And John, let me start off with you.
Well, we've already teased the Wagon Wheel Trophy, but we also have a couple other rivalries that are going to be taking place in the MAC this week. One is going to be the Black Swamp rivalry between Bowling Green and Toledo, which is actually going to be at the Stroh Center at BG. And then you also have Mother Miami and OU going to be playing in the Battle for the Bricks at Millett Hall on Saturday.
All right. John, knowing all our MAC rivalries. Rocco.
I just have a couple of leftover shout-outs to give for amazing weeks. We all know Chris Clemens of Campbell is incredible. He's breaking records almost by the week. Last week, he just went out and averaged 39 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. In addition, he made 53.5% of his shots from the floor, 23 for 43, 88% free throws, and 55% from three. I mean, this guy is a scoring machine. And he does it at a high effective rate. The last nugget I had was a very under the radar freshman who's making a lot of noise out here in the Big West. That would be Lamine Diane from Cal State Northridge. He's won 3 Big West Player of the Week honors. He's the first freshman in Big West history to ever do that. He turned down an offer from Baylor to play for Coach Gottfried. So keep your eye on the Matadors and Mr. Diane.
All right. That's a name I'm going to start following now. Thanks. And David, let me let you finish off the show here.
Another broken record plea here is for the committee to start to look at teams like Wofford, like Lipscomb, and even, I would say, Belmont. Or assuming Belmont is able to survive the rest of the OVC. And sometimes, like, the paper doesn't reflect how good a team is, and sometimes you have to look deeply at the paper to see what's on it. It's more than just who you play that can make a game that's really hard to win. It's not easy to go on the road and win at Liberty. I'm not saying that it's the same as winning in a Power 5 conference, but I am saying that when you get down to the bubble and you look at a team that's maybe won 1 or 2 road games and their best wins are all at home against teams with losing records on the road, you might want to measure that as not being as tough as what some of these under-the-radar schools have done. And a lot of people, and especially under-the-radar fans, complain about the committee. It's biased. They don't know what they're doing. I don't think that's it. I don't think the committee's biased at all. I think that they're just trained to evaluate what's there. They don't really make the schedules. I don't think the committee's what's broken as much as it is. There's just not a way for these under-the-radar schools to get the opportunities outside of the first 6 weeks of the season on very unfavorable terms. You can't really blame the committee for that. But what they can do is look at what these teams have done and realize even though they're not playing teams that are inside the bubble, they're still playing in games that are hard to win, and they deserve credit for winning them.
All right. Great point. But I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. This has been our Under the Radar podcast. I'm Chad Sherwood, Rocco Miller, Bracketeer.org, John Stalica, the blue thing over here next to me.
David,
that's what it was. We'll be back. We've got a bracket rundown show coming up tomorrow night, I believe, and lots of content on the website. So we'll talk to you again real soon.